Welcome back, everybody. It's Mark Steiner right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And welcome to Soundbites, our weekly series on food, agriculture, and our environment. And today we begin a program which we've done. This is the third annual one. It's an amazing story here. This is the third annual Vegan Soul Fest coming up to Baltimore. And I will harken back to those 3 years ago in just a moment with Brenda Sanders, who is executive director of a Better Health, Better Life organization. She's co-organizer of the Vegan Soul Fest and one of the directors of the Open Cages Alliance, an animal advocacy organization in Baltimore that hosts the annual Vegan Living Program and does solidarity organizing with other social justice groups like Save the Kids and Black Lives Matter. And Naja Wright, who's co-owner of Land of Kush, one of our favorite places to eat, co-organizer of the Vegan Soul Fest, and also executive director of the Black Vegetarian Society of Maryland. Ladies, welcome. Good to have you all here.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
It's great to be here.
Third annual Vegan Soul Fest. Third.
Who knew?
We've adopted the slogan, it's going to be vegan so-licious.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, I love it. The slogan is just like... gonna be vegan so delicious.
Do you remember when you all came in 3 years ago?
Yes. I do.
Looking for media, looking for people to talk. who cares? Who's gonna let us talk about the vegan soul?
We were excited about this thing. We had to let everyone know.
So that was, how it's grown.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we started out just hoping that a couple hundred people would come out and listen to what folks have to say, and it's just grown to astronomical numbers in such a short time.
We had to leave the venue that we shout out to the Downtown Cultural Arts Center. They wanted us to stay, but
we were busting out the scenes,
and we had to find another venue.
So how many people showed up to that one?
1,200. Yeah.
Which is more than you expected.
Oh, yeah. Like three times as many.
Way more. Yeah. And we was happy to build a relationship with the Baltimore City Community College last year, and they were kind of like, okay, I don't know what's going to happen, but okay. And when they saw what we brought to the campus, everyone was just so excited and so happy. And so we're going to do it again this year. Bigger, yeah. Better.
This really is bigger. It's become a real thing. It's not that it wasn't always a real thing, but it's just become so huge. It's like growing to a national presence. People know about this. You're the only Vegan Soul Fest in the nation. Did you say you copyrighted the name?
It's a registered
trademark. The name.
Yes. Big into branding. It's all about branding.
Talk a bit about that. Where are we with this? Tell me what's going to happen this year.
Last year we incorporated the music. We had the music the first year. We had the DJ. But last year we actually had musical performers come to town. We flew a husband and wife in, DJ Kavum and Alchemia Earth. And it's something about the music that makes this festival different. We even got rated as someone's second best festival. Even though it's small, the fact that we have these musical performances and these special guest speakers makes it special.
And you have a bunch of freaks. Folks, freaks. Well, maybe they are freaks. Folks. Let's step back for a minute. Let's give our listeners a sense of what really happens at the Vegan Soul Fest. What happens during the day? It's an all-day event, right?
Yeah, all day.
Yeah.
We had to extend it another hour.
We did, because people did not want to go home last year. we want to have something for everybody, and that was our goal. We wanted to have something for people who just want to come with a pencil and a pad and write and learn, have all the questions that they have about plant-based eating and fitness and nutrition, have all of those questions answered, because people have questions, especially about protein. And so we have running lectures by, people who are authorities in the areas of plant-based nutrition and vegan fitness and, just holistic healing and just covering all of those bases for anybody who has those types of questions. And then, of course, for folks who want more of an interactive experience, we have the running cooking demos that are, done by local vegan chefs and caterers who come out and just take time to show folks how to make delicious vegan food. So Of course, we have the Veggie Village, which is a place where people can bring their children to do activities and stuff. And then
that's sponsored by Inseroma Academy.
Right.
And then the musical performances, this is a chance for local performing artists can get their chance on stage in front of tons of people. You're talking about people coming from New England all the way down from the Carolinas. So and they're specially selected. So it's not an open mic. It's not an open mic. We actually scout the musical performers. So
what do you look for?
Oh, well, we look for. So we look for definitely it's got to be family friendly,
positive messages. Definitely.
There may be some, you know, we have some social justice issues going. They may sing about that and cultural. So it's just something that people in the community can definitely relate to and appreciate and enjoy.
So let's talk about who's coming. We got all these folks that will be. Part of this here, so people I don't even know who's Dr. Milton Mills.
So Dr. Milton Mills is an extraordinary man. He's been with us from the beginning, and he really just comes out here to do this work from his heart for the community. He is a doctor, an MD, who promotes the plant-based diet for health, but he also has written articles and done research into the detrimental effects of, say, like dairy on people of color, and specifically on black children in the school system. And he came up with this term, well, I don't know if he came up with it, but he uses this term, nutritional racism, because, you know, the dietary guidelines say that these children have to drink at least, you know, they, in the schools, they have to drink at least one sip of milk before they throw it away. And this is detrimental, you know, to their health. Most of us upwards of 75% of us are lactose intolerant. And so these kids are having these physical issues in school because they're being forced to drink something or eat something that is not, you know, it's not agreeing with their
bodies.
Where
is he from? Is he from here?
He's from this area, the DMV. Yeah, I think he's in Northern Virginia right now.
And somebody I hope we will be talking to in the next week is David Carter, right? The 300-pound
vegan.
300-pound vegan.
David.
So who's David? He's a football player?
Yes. NFL player who...
former.
Right.
I think
he's retiring this year.
Oh, he's retiring? Okay.
Yeah, I think so. But he'll be able to better talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, he was having a lot of physical issues around the sport and just started doing some research, found out about the plant-based diet and decided to try it. Now, Paige Carter, his wife, was already vegan. And so it was like, you know, a really nice surprise to her that he decided to switch over. And now he's using his platform to talk to other people about it.
And he's an engaging individual. He's done a few meetups. Actually, he was at the Hip Hop Green Dinner that we did this year at Northwestern High School. So he did an assembly and he also did a talk at the dinner. And Brenda had a meetup with him. He also did a meetup at the Land of Kush. And people are just drawn to him. They're very intrigued by his story. And especially being in the NFL as a vegan.
Right.
Yeah.
So this might be a good segue here for a moment to step back. I mean, I don't want to assume that everyone knows what we're talking about, not just about the Vegan Soul Fest, but just what vegan is.
Right.
You know, and where this came from. Because we've done a lot of shows together around this issue, but maybe new listeners, not, you know, vegans, you're head of the Vegetarian Society, which is different than being a vegan.
Well, right? when Land of Kush opened up, vegetarian means pure vegetarian. Pure vegetarian is plant-based. It has nothing to do with dairy. It has nothing to do with cheese. It is a pure plant-based diet. So when we're saying vegetarian, we're speaking whole foods. It's a plant-based diet.
But there are
diet.
Some people who are vegetarians who use...
They took it and they ran with it, and it's really may consume.
This is not
may
unique.
Consume dairy and eggs. That may, people said, oh, we're just going to add it to everything. So when you look at the definition, it'll say they may consume... dairy, eggs. When we say it, Land of Kush, vegetarian cuisine is plant-based. So Black Vegetarian Society of Maryland, yeah, people may think it's all-inclusive, but we're still pushing the plant-based mission.
And what I guess what I was saying is that a lot of people who are vegetarians is that their vegetarianism is not eating any flesh
right.
of any kind.
That's right.
Right? And
yes.
You have pescatarians
Absolutely.
Who eat just fish
right.
But won't eat any land-based animal meat, just eat fish. That's right. I mean, there's all levels of how
See,
people...
I've been hearing all kinds of stuff. You know, because nowadays people are just taking these terms and running with them. Mm-hmm. I was talking to a woman...
So much as you say, I'm a vegetarian, I just eat fish. But then you're not a vegetarian.
Exactly. Right. That's just
I'm
what
a vegetarian, but
say.
I eat everything. Okay.
So, yeah. so
you gotta impress me.
So, but you're celebrating a plant-based vegan diet, the vegan diet,
right?
And how do you marry that with Soul Fest?
In search of your vegan soul. So there are individuals out there that need this information. They're looking, they're inquiring, they're asking, and bringing Vegan Soul Fest to the community is basically saying, hey. This is like the biggest outreach you can do. To be honest with you, you know, you don't gotta, you know, set up shop in the church. This is major. This is the location to be August 20th. If you want to know about the vegan lifestyle, whether you're veg curious, whether you call yourself flexitarian and you're not sure what you're doing or how you're consuming things or the nutritional value of just being a vegan, the whole animal rights concept in terms of compassion, learning compassion and understanding what that means, and an environmental piece, the environmental aspect of it. This is
of veganism.
Of veganism.
And that's a huge piece. I mean, people don't really think about the effects that raising, especially a large amount of industrial meat, the way we do it in this world today with industrialized meat, with thousands of pigs and thousands mm-hmm. of cows and tons of thousands of chickens crammed up in one place, the fecal matter, and also just how that contributes to the ozone deterioration
right.
and all the rest. I mean, this is it's a huge issue that people don't really wrestle with very much.
Let alone the stress that they endure going
the
through this
themselves.
And then you're consuming that, you're right. eating that stress. A lot of people don't understand the connection. Okay, the cows are stressed, the pigs are stressed, chickens are stressed, the fish are stressed, and you're putting that into your body. You're stressed.
And part of it also seems just to get people to get a sense of what this is about is when you have an Afro-Vegan Soul Fest, I mean, it's a huge cultural piece, too. I mean, more and more African-centered people in this country, as well as everybody in this country, are becoming vegans. I'm just talking about the African community.
Yeah.
You see it growing. You see it growing in Baltimore, right?
It was always in there. It's Italo. You know,
right.
the Jamaicans, this is Italo Vitale.
Right, right,
you know what
right,
I'm saying?
Right,
so,
right, right.
Well, I think a big part of the reason why there's such a shift as well is just that, you know, it's bad out here. I mean, in terms of health, the health disparities within especially low-income black communities is just off the charts.
Government-driven.
And so we need to start coming up with some solutions to these issues. And, you know, drastic times call for drastic measures. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not really interested in pushing, like, half measures. Like, you know, I want people in our communities to have vitality. I want them to thrive. I want them to feel good, to have energy, to be healthy. And so as far as I'm concerned and the research that I've done, the plant-based diet is definitely one that can start to reverse a lot of the health issues that are prevalent in our communities.
And I think another thing that Vegan Soul Fest does is it tells people that, hey, there's a whole lot of folks out here. I think one thing that happens with individuals that are trying the vegan lifestyle is their social life changes. Because now if you're hanging out after work and you're deciding to become vegan, but everyone's used to going to the steakhouse, it's kind of like, okay, what are we going to do? Like, you know, you're going to get a salad. It just becomes uncomfortable to some. But, you know, as you're venturing out programs like the Vegan Living Program, workshops, support groups, folks are out there. So Vegan Soul Fest is a place where you can go to learn about all of these support groups that are out there and available.
Yeah,
you're talking about over 100 vendors.
Yeah.
Last year we had 100. We are probably at 120 now, and it's still going up.
What kind of vendors do you have there?
We went from 22 food vendors last year. This year, close to 40.
They have to be vegan, though, right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's all everything.
You can't have
all
people serving
vegan.
Chicken in your Vegan Soul Fest.
Oh, that's veggie chicken.
That's right.
Veggie chicken, yeah. So we're nearly doubled the number of food vendors. And when you're saying food, you got your comfort food, you have your raw food, you have your desserts, you have your sorbets, ice cream. Somebody with organic cotton candy is coming out.
Papawabe Sorrel.
Sorrel, yeah. You drink Sorrel, teas, right? Yes, right. All food and drink. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be amazing. I mean, you're talking about the best of the best when it comes to vegan food that's going to be out there. So it's definitely something that if people are just curious and they just want to know, like, is this really good? Like, does this food really taste good? Because people, it's a comfort thing. People,
well, but people are intimidated by, a lot of people are intimidated by a vegan, the notion of vegan diet, because it changes the whole way you think about cooking, how you cook.
There's a lot of money.
You know, and I think it's intimidating to some people.
Well, the thing about it is that there are so many ways to, like, substitute that you really can still have your chili, you can still have your lasagna, you can still have your stew, you can still have, you know, all of that is just, instead of putting the animal products in, now you're substituting in vegan products. And there's so many substitutes now.
I say, if you go vegan, you're going to have so many more options than your fish, pork, beef, and chicken.
Right?
Way more options. You know how many fruits and vegetables are out there? Grains, beans, legumes. Come on, man. We got y'all beat. By a long shot.
So, let me ask one more question about who's coming here. I know we've had them on the show before. Watoto?
Oh,
my goodness.
Right?
Watoto got to go with us everywhere. You know why? Because Watoto represents the younger female generation, and we need Watoto. We need positive female images, female performers, and what they sing about, social justice issues, cultural, loving yourself as a black queen, goddess. We need that in the community. Some women, the self-esteem issue is low. These girls, my daughter, 4-year-old, 4 years old.
She's 4 already.
Yeah, she knows the track of a couple of songs. And she'll say, Mommy, Mommy, play Cherish Your Life. This is a 4-year-old. So it's impactful. We need it. And you're going to love them. Watoto from the now.
And let me just go through some of the folks that are going to be there, just give people a sense of who's there. Antoinette Sinclair.
Right.
Who is she?
So she's a nutritionist and a holistic doctor a holistic health practitioner who definitely talks about how to use food to heal and how to use food to promote optimal health. So as opposed to, you know, going and getting the drugs and everything, you know, that there are food options, you know, for fixing some of these problems that mm-hmm. we have.
Yeah, so her company is True Self Total Health. She's also a board member on the Black Vegetarian Society of Maryland.
Okay, there we go again. Black Vegetarian Society of Maryland. We're everywhere. And Dr. Terry Victor?
He's a dentist. He's a holistic dentist.
What does that mean?
Well, he uses, instead of,
instead of Novocaine, he gives you a vegetable?
No, I'm kidding. No. I don't think so. I mean, I could call an ass.
Suck on this carrot while I do your tooth. No. I'm sorry.
So I know that he's using a lot of more cutting edge technology and doing things like filling the teeth,
yes.
And you know, that kind of using the ceramic instead of the mercury fillings and that kind
yes.
of stuff.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Greg loves him. He made us switch dentists. He will not go to anyone else. He goes all the way down to DC to see Dr. Terry Victor now.
So Greg. Greg, so now you have to go to DC.
Yes.
Yeah, and he also, the other thing that he does, which I thought was intriguing, is that he talks about how proper diet can contribute to good dental health.
Well,
so I cannot mm-hmm. wait to hear
He's
what he
awesome.
Has to say. Because mm-hmm. nobody's really coming from that perspective.
That's fascinating. It'd be fun to talk to him.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get some of these folks on next week to talk just before your festival. I'd be interested to hear
okay.
what they have to say.
Okay.
I really would. So and Kimatani
he does
Rollins.
Fit Fathers. And he's he's been to the White House. He, you know, has this whole program around, dads being active with their children, physically active with their children, working out together, you know, and he's going to talk about plant-based fitness because he is 100%, you know, plant-based, whole foods, plant-based, you know, he's just, you know, that's his passion. So I'm really excited about having him come out as well.
He does an annual Fit Fathers event for Father's Day, every Father's Day. So he just finished his third annual one this year, and it's growing as well. So we're excited to have him.
So all these other folks are music.
Yes.
Tell us about your music, Helen.
Oh,
they,
wow.
Do they play all day, different venues around, or they just...
Well, Mother Queen, she's definitely a soulful artist, and she does local events. She does a lot of the Black Wall Street events. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Donnie Glover
from
Be More
yeah.
News. Mm-hmm. He does a lot of Black Wall Street events in Baltimore and other major cities. But she sings a lot at his events and also some nightclubs. So it's real soulful, you know, neo-soul type of music.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. What else you got coming? Who are we missing here?
Buddha Bass.
Buddha Bass.
Yes, Buddha Bass. I would just call him hip-hop, you know, but uplifting and positive hip-hop. And then Poet Deep is more of your militant poet. He's going to sing or rap about, you know, some social justice issues. He also has some health songs that he's worked on that he's going to introduce at the festival as well. His wife is one of the food vendors. They do all raw food, Foodtastic
Family
Visions.
Yeah.
So they are raw foods vendors, and they all them and their children all raw foods.
Raw food is like a subset of being a vegan.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. It's like extra vegan.
Vegan without fire, at least a certain kind of fire.
That's right.
So I'm curious where you think this is going, your Vegan Soul Fest. This is 3 years now. It's really been grown by leaps and bounds. I mean, everybody comes here. It's not just vegans who come there. Everybody comes here, right?
Everybody comes.
So what's your vision? Where do you think this is going?
This is going to be a destination festival. I mean, people are going to come to... They're going to save up for vacation, and they're going to come to Baltimore to
That's
come to
plan.
Our festival.
That's the plan.
They're going to plan to be here and go to the festival with us.
And definitely shout out to Visit Baltimore. They're on board to help us with that. So they're one of the sponsors this year. They sponsored last year, and they came down, they took a look, and they saw what was going on, and they're really interested in making this our dream, the destination to come for this Vegan Soul Fest.
You know, in a larger sense, that's really important, because when we talk about tourism, here we have our city is 60-odd% African-American, whatever that number is now. I'm not sure, 63 last time I checked. I think it's a little less, but whatever it is, it's around 60%. And when we have tourism, it's all centered in downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Or as Lawrence Brown would call it, the white L, not the black butterfly, in terms of what the city's the communities are shaped like.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really important. I mean, to get people, tourists come in to come out to Liberty Heights.
Yes.
You know, to come out of the center of the city.
Yes. When I travel, I like to see what the city looks like. I mean, it's good to do the touristy thing, but you're not doing anything unless you're really going into
where the
people are and how they're really living. So I love to do that.
So it's important.
It's important.
So is this inside or outside we're doing this festival?
Both. Yep. Most of the vendors will be outdoors. The food vendors definitely going to be outdoors. We will have some folks because, you know, like I think somebody's doing massage. They're going to be indoors. Some of our sponsors will be indoors. But for the most part, the things that will be indoors are going to be the programming. You know, so the lectures are going to be in the auditorium. The food demos are going to be in the cafeteria. And then the children's activities will be in the gym.
And the main stage will be outside. And speaking of sponsors, we definitely want to give a shout-out to Vegan Outreach and A Welfare World.
Who are they?
Yeah, so Vegan Outreach is this amazing animal rights organization that has decided to do what a lot of and the big animal rights organizations haven't done, which is to reach out into the community and to start redirecting some of their resources towards grassroots, you know, on the ground organizing, which a lot of the big orgs, they raise their money, they do their stuff, they pay their salaries, that's it. And we never see any of that money. So Vegan Outreach has decided, you know, we want to be a part of the solution. We want to take all of this access that we have to all of these resources, and we want to redirect it to people who really need it. And
we, you gotta tell me you're part of Vegan Outreach.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it's weird.
That's why I handed it up, because she's part of Vegan Outreach and a Welfare World.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm a part of a lot of stuff. Yeah, but I mean, they made this decision before I ever came along. I can't take any credit for the decision that Vegan Outreach made to do this. Now, you know, that I'm working with Vegan Outreach and we're organizing events and doing stuff, and they're just supporting all my work here in Baltimore. I just feel proud to be
because
a part
lot of your
of
work
it.
Has to do with animal rights.
No,
right?
No. Most of my work has to do with food justice.
Weren't you in animal rights really big for a while? Was that part of your work?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, I advocate for animals, and I can't not advocate for animals, because once it became clear to me, like, what human beings are doing to animals on the planet right now, it's like, okay, I'm an activist. That's what I do.
Right,
like,
right,
I see an injustice,
right,
and
right.
I have to try to be a part of the solution. But a lot of our work is around food specifically, and so... You know, through Vegan Soul Fest, through the Vegan Living Program, through Pep Foods, we're trying to bring solutions into our communities to these pressing health problems.
I mean, because you, both of you, I guess, and Nasha, you both are really believe that being a vegan is not just a diet choice.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, it's the whole thing from compassion, environmental, and dietary. Now, there are individuals that may focus on one more than the other.
Yep.
So, I mean, vegan is vegan.
Yeah, there's no reason why you can't have a circumspective, you know, way of engaging with veganism. A lot of people, a lot of folks just want to concentrate on the health benefits and how it can, you know, pull their communities out of the situation that we're in. And then, of course, there are folks who only focus on the animal stuff. But I think that there's a growing number of people who are just seeing, like, it all matters. It's all important.
It is. I mean, I have one of my closest buddies in Chicago. He became a vegan. I was shocked when he became a vegan. I was. I mean,
why?
You know, because he was, you know, he's a graduate from West Point. Kind of the tough guy, brilliant economist, became revolutionary after he was in Vietnam, and you know, football player, and all of a sudden he decided to become a vegan, but for political reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we can't feed the world, we can't change society if we're going to be eating meat, and he became a vegan for political reasons. People become vegans for lots of reasons.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes.
Have a party, a humane party.
The political party.
Wow. Party.
Mm-hmm. I think that being vegan can be a revolutionary act, quite honestly.
I'm sure you do. No, I wasn't making fun. I think that's good. That's, you know, you're an activist. You're in the middle of the community. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know,
but explain what you mean by that.
Well, I feel like rejecting all the systems of oppression, rejecting all the ways in which those vulnerable communities are, you know, exploited and taken advantage of is a revolutionary thing to do. And besides that, you know, these supremacist structures are doing the same things to these different marginalized groups. And so why, you know, be fighting against supremacist attitudes on one hand, but then participating in them on another? You know, we can say no to all of it.
Right. So no, I think that's really important to kind of think about through the complexity of this whole vegan world. And then when you throw Afro-vegan into the mix.
Mm. Yeah, you know, the thing is that we in the African-American community don't talk about as much is the fact that a lot of the foods that we're currently eating are holdovers from slave food.
Right.
You know, we don't talk about the fact that we were throwing the scraps, the snouts, the feet, the ears, the tails, the, you know, the tongues, all of
right.
that, the wings, you know what I mean? The stuff that the people in the big house, you know, looked at as scraps. And of course we made the best of it because that's what you do. You know, you make it so that you can live and you can survive and maybe even thrive. But there comes a point at which, you know, you can say, okay, we don't have to do this anymore.
And before there was to Black History, and we celebrate Black History Month, but it's really Black History 365. It was ancient Black history, and we weren't eating like this.
No.
So we need to focus and learn more about the ancient Black history and what were we eating.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. This is, I think it's an exciting time, and what you all are doing is really exciting. This is, I'm just so blown away by the expansion of this, how it's really so grown.
It's taken on a life of its own.
I'm not surprised.
Najee and I couldn't stop this train if we wanted to.
Right. I mean, you had no idea where this train was going when you started it.
No, we just got together. Just, we were talking like about the problems in our communities, and we were like, well, what can we do? Yeah. You know,
you gotta be action oriented. Right. You see a lot of people sitting around, they talk about they want to do this, they want to do that, and I'm a person, I like to act on things. We can talk and talk all day. It's kind of like, okay, it's the first time we're doing this. Let's just go do it and see where it takes us. And 3 years later, which is a very short time mm-hmm. frame, you know, we're doing well. We're doing, this is excellent.
I mean, so I'm going to let folks know exactly what's happening. So it's Saturday, August the 20th, a week from this Saturday.
Yes.
From 12 to 7 p.m.
At Baltimore City Community
College. On Liberty Heights, right? Mm-hmm. 2901 Liberty Heights. So it's all this. So you did extend it.
Yes.
We did.
1 hour.
Yeah, we had to.
So, I mean, I just think that this is something that everybody can be comfortable at. No matter who you are.
Oh, yep. Absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
Whether
absolutely.
You're a meat eater or a non-meat eater. Yeah.
Yes.
Please come get some of this delicious vegan
diverse
food.
Crowd. Yes, absolutely.
And the diversity of the crowd mm-hmm. and all the rest.
Which is important. This everybody needs to, you know, be able to come together and celebrate culture and vegan living.
Because it is a celebration. I mean, mm-hmm. It's a joyous day.
Yes.
It is.
That's it is. I mean, with all the stuff that's going on out in Baltimore, like, this is one thing you can come to, and it's all positive.
That's right.
That's important.
Very important.
Because there's so much pain right now happening around us.
Mm-hmm.
Some deep pain.
Oh, yeah, we know.
Yeah, you know,
we need that, to celebrate.
Yes.
Right. To just come out and just feel something very different.
Right.
Feel the vegan soul, the energy around all of that.
Right.
I think it's so exciting. I'm just can't wait. August 20th, and any luck, maybe next week, we'll be talking to some of the other folks that are coming to the festival.
Absolutely.
Maybe David Carter, awesome. Some of the other, Dr. Terry, Victor would be cool. All this would be interesting to hear what they have to say about their world and their lives and why they're coming here. This would be great.
All right.
In the studio this hour, Brenda Sanders and Najee Wright, the two women who co-founded this Vegan Soul Fest, this is the third year, and again, we'll go back to that very first year, and they came in the studio and kind of looking around, trying to get this thing started. They knew they had something, they believed in it, and it just has exploded.
And you believed in us.
Yes, I remember that day. We reached out, like, okay, who's going to like this? Who's going to want to talk about? Mark Steiner.
Absolutely, no, I love this. I'm very excited about this all the time. So a week from Saturday, August 20th, 2016. 12 to 7 p.m. at the Baltimore City Community College campus on Liberty Heights, 2901 Liberty Heights Avenue. Plenty of buses go there. It's easy to get to, driving or walking or taking whatever. Yes. It's just up the street.
That was the whole point.
That's right.
That's the whole point. No excuse for you not to get there. You don't have to own a car or anything.
Inside, outside, and just come enjoy the day and learn something about vegan food and health and culture and enjoy the music. And it's for the whole family. Bring children.
Absolutely.
Yes. Pray for everybody.
For more info, vegansoulfest.com.
VeganSoulFest.com. That's it?
That's it.
All right. Thank you all for being here. This is great.
Thank you so much for having us, Mark.
We're about to take a short break. We're coming right back because when we come back, we're going to talk about air quality in Maryland and look at Governor Hogan's veto of the Clean Energy Jobs Act, what that means, and the people who are opposing that. Stay with us. Don't go away. We're about to have a conversation about several issues, but built around the Clean Energy Jobs Act. That Governor Hogan vetoed, and many people want to see that veto override, what it really does mean, and the whole idea of having 25% of our energy by 2020 coming from renewable sources, and that was part of what was vetoed. And we're talking about that with our two guests here in the studio for this soundbite segment. We have Tiffany Hartung, who is manager of the Maryland Climate Coalition, and Dr. Maria Brown, who's a Maryland pediatrician who's been deeply involved in all these issues, and welcome to have you. Both of you in the studio.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
So the politics of this, let me just start with you, Tiffany. Just, This bill was voted on in the last session, right?
That's right.
Talk about what's inside this bill and what was vetoed.
Sure. So what the bill would do, the Clean Energy Jobs Act, is it would increase Maryland's the amount of clean, renewable energy that Maryland uses to 25% by the year 2020. So it would increase the amount of renewable energy that Marylanders are using. It passed the state legislature this spring with a pretty wide support and bipartisan support, and also had public support of about nearly three quarters of Marylanders supporting it. We did some polling that showed us that, but unfortunately, it was vetoed by the governor in May.
Now we'll ask him and talk to him about that, his office. But why? What was the argument for vetoing it? That it would hurt business?
Yeah, so the governor's argument, I believe, was concerned around the impact to customers. However, there was a lot of benefits that we believe the governor really wasn't evaluating.
Impact because it would cost people more on their gas and electric bill.
Yes.
Right.
There's a marginal increase, an analysis that suggests that it could be as much as 50 cents in about 10 years out per month.
15 cents a month, you said?
I'm sorry, 50.
50
cents,
50
yes.
50 cents a month.
Yes.
So there are a lot of questions here. Now, we're living here in the summer where there have already been some code oranges that have popped up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know it was 3 years ago or so, there was a study that came out saying that Maryland had more deaths per capita per 100,000 people, heat-related deaths and pollution-related deaths than any other state in the country, which is pretty huge. So where are we now? What's the health effect of all this, Dr. Brown?
So right now, about 20% of kids in Baltimore City have asthma. Okay, so that's about a little more than twice the national average, which is about 9.4%. Of these kids, of this percentage of kids, there's a large number who are hospitalized and sent to the emergency department every year for asthma. And the number of kids who are sent to the emergency department and hospitalized for asthma in Baltimore City is larger than in other parts of the state. The health effects of air pollution on kids are vast. It ranges from everything from associations with preterm birth, low birth weight. With respect to kids with asthma, all the components of, or five of the criteria components of air pollution are respiratory irritants, and so will exacerbate symptoms of asthma, increase cough and wheeze. So that's going to make kids have more asthma attacks, make them go to the emergency department and be hospitalized.
So is there a connection between, let's explore this a little more deeply.
Yep.
Is there direct conclusive medical evidence as a connection between asthma and pollution? In cities,
there's absolutely data that supports that ozone is a potent respiratory irritant and exacerbates asthma, and particulate matter will
exacerbate.
The data is less clear on the development of asthma.
Right.
There's data out of a group in California, Gatterman et al., who published a paper in the New England Journal of Medicine last spring that looked at lung development and function in kids who were 11 to 15 years of age. And it was an interesting study because they were able to look at, as the rates of pollution in California dropped over a little over a decade, they looked at three cohorts of kids. And the kids, as the I believe it was for particulate matter and nitric oxide, as those went down, the pulmonary function increased. So we have to kind of remember that the lungs are still developing until kids are 18. So in that period of time, the kids who were exposed to less pollution, their lungs developed fuller, and they looked at lung function with a measure of what's called forced expiratory volume. And that is something that's affected in asthma. So that study really showed that, as if you are able to get rid of the pollution, that you'll have, sort of improved lung development and function, which, then you're set into adulthood with better capacity and less likely to be affected as you get older.
So when we come back to the other aspect of this, so if by 2020, the goal, and we've always had a hard time meeting any of these goals in the state of Maryland or most any place in the country, that
How would that affect any of this? I mean, we're not talking about 50%, 75%. I mean, we're still getting, we would still have energy from coal and gas and oil and the effect of cars and the way we build our cities and the rest. So, I mean, so why is 25% from renewable resources really that so significant?
Yeah, so we have, there's analysis that shows that increasing the amount of renewable energy that Maryland uses by 25% will significantly improve health outcomes in Maryland. So that analysis shows that it'll prevent 25 to 50 premature deaths and increase regional economic growth by $200 million to $450 million annually due to better health outcomes.
What does that mean? I mean, that second part, I mean, the deaths we can come back to, but the argument around the business part has always been a place where there's been a real divide over the reality of that. I mean, A, what the jobs really pay. I mean, you can look at coal, let's say. And people say, well, you look at the coal industry, and granted, it's a miserable pollutant and what it does to our world, but it's been around a long time, and the jobs in coal pay 2-3 times as much as they pay in clean energy. And we're talking about working class people trying to make a living. So how do you address that?
Sure. So I would say that Maryland has thousands of clean energy jobs right now, and a lot of clean energy industries that are making investments in Maryland and are based here. And that will grow with the more clean energy investments and the more the state makes a commitment to that. And the health outcomes, the increase in millions in health and due to annual better health outcomes is, I think, more along the lines of what Dr. Brown is talking about, with so less health care cost for Maryland families, less health bills that folks are paying, but that they have freeing up those resources that they can spend elsewhere in Maryland.
So before we come back to Dr. Brown, we've got to let you jump right in here. But there still is that issue that is one of the arguments, that the jobs don't pay as well as they pay in dirty industries as they do in clean industries. I mean, that's still a hurdle to overcome.
It is. Well, there's that's one of the arguments. I would say that a lot of the clean energy industries, a lot of the jobs that are being created are good-paying, family-supporting jobs. And that is something that we're pushing for and a component of the bill that we're working on.
Because that's the name of the bill.
Right, the Clean Energy Jobs Act. Yeah. And then also the idea is to help the bill has some provisions in it to help or it originally did have some provisions in it. And the final bill that passed does create a working group for the state to look at how to better ensure that all Marylanders are benefiting from the clean energy investments in the state and getting those jobs and are trained and providing a pipeline of skilled workers, skilled Maryland workers to fill those jobs.
I mean, to cut you off, you're about to say what?
You know, I was just going to sort of add in, you know, that we can't have a sort of work this part of the conversation without including the health care costs. And so data from the State Health Department from 2009 cited that the average cost per asthma emergency department visit in Baltimore City was $820 for a child aged 0 to 17, and the hospitalization on average was over $7,500. So I think that you definitely have to kind of factor that in when we're thinking about overall costs. And then also we have to factor in the kids who miss school because they have asthma, and their parents also have to miss work when their kids are hospitalized with asthma. So I think that sort of all goes to, you know, as factors into the sort of economic component of it.
That's right. Yeah, it's a real cost to Marylanders, the health impacts of this. And so it's, you know, why we're calling on the General Assembly to overturn the veto this next year in 2017, because there's, you know, as Dr. Brown's talking about, there are Marylanders who really can't wait for better, cleaner air.
So, I mean, given the votes, the veto is possible.
Right.
Come January.
The veto override.
Override,
yes,
excuse me.
Yes, it is.
The veto
that's correct.
Is possible. It happened. I mean, the
yes.
Override.
Right. That's right, yeah. Right.
So what does it mean, you know, when and I was reading Scott Dance's, some of his articles he's been writing, and when he said that 3 of the 18 ozone monitors around the state have not measured below the new threshold, and threshold being 75 parts per billion down to 70 parts per billion. And so what does that mean? I mean, and what does that mean per billion? What are we talking about here?
Yeah, so that means so that there's a number of air monitors around the state that monitor air quality. EPA recently adjusted the standards for the sort of the what defines the settings they have for the orange and red alert day, air quality alert days. And so I think what Scott was probably implying is that there's a lot of, even with the sort of more stringent standards, there's prior to that, that the air quality of days, there's been a lot of unhealthy air quality days, where it's just unhealthy for people to be outside, in particularly people with who are sensitive populations.
My understanding is that the EPA lowered that based on folks with respiratory disease and other illnesses that would have decreased symptoms when exposed to those lower levels of ozone and decreased costs of, you know, hospitalizations and such.
When the governor makes the argument that he doesn't think we should put this on the backs of the citizens to pay for, what is your response to that? That was part of his reasoning, as I remember it.
Right. That is one of his.
Last April. So
that's his argument, but he's not taking into context the full impacts and savings. So he's not taking into context the public health improvements and the impacts on people who are particularly sensitive populations on these days where it's unhealthy for them to be outside or unhealthy for the rest of us to be outside. And he's not also taking into context thinking about the economic investments from the clean energy industry and the job creation value of it.
Go ahead.
I would just add that we kind of already are paying for it with everything that we just talked about. So
when we say, when people push the idea that by 2020, they're 25% of our energy will come from renewable sources, non-polluting sources. I mean, A, what does that mean? And B, what's the plan to get there? I mean, how does that happen?
So Maryland's law defines the renewable energy definition, and it has a couple of different tiers. It ranges. It includes wind, solar. It includes some other sources such as incineration and biomass that we're not huge fans of, certainly polluting sources still. And then it also includes hydroelectric. Right now, because of the market, wind and solar are certainly the economic winners. And so we're seeing much more of a growth in that area because they are cheaper. And a lot of utilities, that's the preference.
There's a lot of community opposition to solar and wind. You find it in neighborhoods across. We love solar, but don't put it next to my house. We love wind, but don't put that thing near where I live.
Right. There's certainly a lot of a dialogue that wind and solar developers need to have and some community engagement that they need to be doing with the communities and figuring out that right balance of siting and the benefits that those landowners receive from it and the benefits that the rest of us receive. But there's also a lot of growth of solar, rooftop solar, and a lot of interest in that in the state.
So I'm curious, why now? Why did you make the push now this summer?
So we were hoping that we would be done with this after the legislative session and that Maryland would begin. So you asked about how does Maryland get there. We're currently on track to meet our current renewable energy standard of goal, which is 20%. But this ramps that scale up to 25% at a quicker speed. And the law and the legislation defines that scale. And so it ramps it up on an annual basis to ultimately get us to that 25%. Hopefully the legislature will overturn the veto in next year and we can begin to ramp up that scale at that time.
Are you about to jump in with that? Maria,
go ahead. I think I was just going to add that my understanding was that that this increase to renewables would help us meet the requirements that were set by the Greenhouse Reduction Act that was also passed this last session.
Yeah, that's correct. So so Maryland passed legislation, or updated, rather, renewed. this past year, Maryland renewed and extended its current Greenhouse Gas Reduction Act, and extended those goals. So the state's current climate action plan, and Governor Hogan signed that, which was great. And so this increasing Maryland's renewable energy standard with this bill will help us meet the goals that Maryland has set out in that.
I think from a public health standpoint, in terms of why now, I think, we've certainly reached a point where the knowledge about, or the data emerging, continuing to emerge about the health effects of air pollution is certainly great enough that we need to act. I think there have been enough public health mistakes in the past, one large example being with lead, when we knew from the 20s that it was harmful, and then we continue to have lead in gasoline, and kids who grew up in the 70s and 80s had lead levels of 10 or over, where now we know that really no lead level is safe. So I think we kind of...
Look what happens in Baltimore City.
Right.
Where you have 65,000 kids between 1993 and now being infected by lead, by water, or where they live. So it's still a major issue. It hasn't gone away.
No, absolutely. But I think that, in terms of, lead is an air pollutant from gasoline. We certainly made improvements in that arena. So I think that, when we look at air pollution, when you look at the sort of combined effects of the burning of fossil fuels and what it does to air pollution and climate change, that we can't afford to not act now.
Well, we'll follow this pretty closely. You just heard Dr. Maria Brown, who's a Maryland pediatrician who's been deeply involved in this work, and Tiffany Hartung, who is manager of the Maryland Climate Coalition. More information about their work and what's going on will be at steinershow.org and at soundbitesradio.org. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Welcome, sulfur dioxide. Hello, carbon monoxide.
The Mark Steiner Show and Soundbites are productions of the Center for Emerging Media, made possible in part by a grant from the Town Creek Foundation. Our senior producer is Mark Gunnery. Our producer is Imani Spence. Our engineer is Andrea Melton. Our interns are Morgan Barber and Calvin Perry. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. The podcast of Mark Steiner Show, share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org, or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. You can also learn more about Soundbites and listen to past episodes at soundbitesradio.org. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.
Hello, carbon monoxide.